Well, hello there.
Hey, hey, hey.
You're here with the Gillettes.
I'm Matt, and this is my lovely wife, Nicole.
We're so honored and excited to share this time with you. This is the Raising Wonder podcast, and in it we'll be exploring all things family and kid-related regarding how to raise children to see themselves and the world around them as wonders to behold.
Let's be honest. Raising kids is hard, and we believe that raising wonder makes it beautiful too.
And wonder is multiplied in community. So let's get talking about today's topic.
Let's go.
All right. Hello and welcome to our guest today. We have Mr. Ricardo Rivers, and Matt is here with me again. We've officially moved to Matt being the co-host for this podcast, so
we're excited.
Yeah, we're excited about that. But Mr. Rivers, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I was thinking before we were starting tonight that I don't know that I've ever not called you Mr. Rivers, and you always called me Miss Gillette too. Right? Is that true? I feel like that was accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the reason for that is we have a long span of years where we got to work together, which was like one of my most favorite special times in my life, I feel like. And we also became friends. So we're coworkers and friends, and we have a lot to talk about. And one of the reasons that we wanted to invite you on was because you have so much wisdom around working with kids and families and loving them well and holding mm-hmm. them to the high standards that they deserve and that they can meet. And we just can't wait to glean some of that wisdom today. And I thought that it was a good time of year too, especially like re-entering school for families and parents and caregivers who might already be starting to see like, all right, we're back in the swing of things. What is this year going to look like, and how can mm-hmm. we best support our kids? And I know that you'll have a lot to talk about with that. Yeah. So my first question that I wanted to ask you, I know because you're so kind, you are probably not going to like it. And if you decline, I have a story that I can also say as a backup. I'm ready with that. But one of the things that I really want to hold too is that I will be continuing to be really vulnerable and also just honest with people. And especially as I'm in this role now where I'm doing the parent coaching, and I want to be able to give advice and support to caregivers and families, parents, kids. So I'm coming from this like place of wanting to teach and wanting to lead people. But at the same time, I want to be really transparent with people that I have been in the struggle, and I still struggle through things too today. And I thought you are a great person to maybe share a story, or thinking about like a time when you walked into my classroom and you saw me maybe struggling, or if you saw, maybe you can think of a story. I'll give you a minute to think, because like I said, I know you're probably gonna be like, no, I'm only gonna be kind, because you're always kind. But I have a story ready. And while you're thinking, I want to be sure to introduce to what your titles are, because you have a lot of awesome things that you do. So when I worked with you, you were a behavior interventionist, right? Was that your official title?
Right.
Yeah. And now you're the dean of students at a school in Charleston, so it's South Carolina. That's where we also taught together. And you also have other experience in education. I know you might touch on that in your past. And you also are a photographer, which is really cool. So probably talk about all those things.
Very talented.
Yeah. So we're gonna be talking shop a little bit today. How are you feeling about that, Matt?
I'm ready.
Yeah. You've never worked in education, but you have been on like the sidelines of it for many years.
I've been Robin.
Yeah.
In Batman and Robin for a little while.
Yeah.
I've watched how the sausage is made.
Yes. Yeah. So were you able to think of anything, thinking back to like the early days of like Miss Gillette, like newer to teaching, and a time that I maybe was struggling, or maybe a thing that you taught me that you might remember? And if you don't want to, I totally understand. It's like I said, you're so gracious and kind, and I'm ready with a story if so.
I do remember.
Pulling it out the holster.
Yeah.
I want to want to say, what was the struggle with you and opposite KB?
This is a student where we all know who you're talking about. Dearly loved, yes. Many, many stories are coming to mind right now.
Yes, what was the struggle? I'll honestly say that I think we needed to get more involvement from parents and a shift in behavior. And I'll say one of the great things, like, because I think you had them 2 years, right?
I did, yeah.
You had them for 2 years. And I think, like, once we got, like, a buy-in from family, from my mom and, you know, dad, God rest his soul, we sort of saw, like, a transition, because it was like, you and Ms. Gamble, can we call names?
Yeah, teachers, I think, for sure. Yeah, especially, yeah, I know. You're good with that. You'll know it.
You and I'll say you and Ms. Gamble, you all had one thing in mind, and then it was like, parents were on a different page, but once we all got, like, everyone on the same page, and he realized that, well, I can't get over on my teachers in class because they're on the same parents. We sort of saw, like, a shift in his behavior. Like, it wasn't like 100% improvement, but I mean, you know, we celebrate the small victories. So I will say that's my my story.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing. I know I made you uncomfortable, so I appreciate it. And you got wisdom right out the gates, like celebrating those small things. That's huge. That's huge in school and at home. And yeah, I think that we felt that a little bit today, to be honest. We had a little bit of a rougher day today with our daughter. And it's so easy to just spiral into like these thoughts of, oh, the rest of the day is going to be horrible. And like, oh, what does this mean for like tomorrow and years to come? And it's like, instead, if you can see some victories, as small as they might be, and then actually celebrate them, it shifts the whole environment. And it can be huge. Yeah. So we were celebrating a little bit at dinner tonight. Those little small things of like, that was great. You thought, you remembered to put your plate in the sink. Woo, that was awesome. Like things that you maybe just would be like, great, well, she should just do that. She knows that's the rule or whatever. I think when kids see that you're acknowledging those efforts that they're making, and then they also seem like small things to us, but in their lives, they can be like really big things. Yeah. So your current title right now, Dean of Students, I feel like is made for you, and it's perfect because my memories of you are, oh, so should I tell my story real quick? Yeah, it's really fast. Sure. So one thing that I thought of when I was thinking of the many, many ways that you supported me over the years, of how to really understand and get to know and love kids and their families well, I was having a hard time with a student, and I came to you and talked to you about it, and I remember you asked me, did you like ask them about their morning? Do you know if they like, what was their morning like today? Did they get a chance to eat breakfast? Did they have everything they needed for school? And it just changed my mindset so much on how to approach people. Like, everybody is coming from a place, a space that even just like within one day, what was the first 30 minutes of their day like? Because I know that that affects us as adults, and especially when people are going through tough things too, maybe in their home life or things that we just don't know about. People are walking around with things all the time that we don't know about. So I learned that from you.
That's great, because I knew that you knew that and you did that in your classroom, but I didn't know where you learned that from. And I actually implement that in my workday too. Like when I pick up some of the guys that are in transitional parts of their life, the first question when they get in the truck is if they ate. Did you eat breakfast? Do you need a cup of coffee? If they say yes, then we grab something to eat before we work, because nobody wants to work on an empty stomach or not having a cup of coffee or something like that, you know? So I didn't know where you learned that from, so thank you. It's impacted even more than just Nicole.
Yeah. Yeah, so good. So yeah, I was saying your title's perfect because when I think of you, I think of you are just so loved by everybody. Teachers, other colleagues, administrators, people in the community, families, but mostly kids. I just remember kids always wanting to be with you, always looking to hang out and just spend, even if it's a quick walk through a hall from one spot to another. Mm-hmm. So for you to be called Dean of Students is so awesome. I think it's just perfect for you.
I agree.
Yeah, so what is that role like?
So basically, this year is different from last year. Last year I was putting out a lot of fires, trying to be proactive. But this year is like I'm able to go into the classrooms, see exactly what's going on, and sometimes like put the fire out before it even happens. Mm-hmm. So I have like four people that work with me, two counselors and two student concern specialists. And if there's an issue with behavior, the student concern specialist, they get that student first, talk to them. If it continues, then I'll get the student. It's like, I'm not seen as the bad guy as much. the crazy thing is, like this year, we're actually in a brand new building, so our school got its own location. Nice. And my office is away from middle school. Middle school students are like the ones that always in my office. Mm-hmm. And all their classrooms are on one side and my office is like all the way down the hallway near the special area rooms. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking I wouldn't have as many visitors, but
they still find their way.
It's like I'm going to the restroom and they walk right past the restroom.
Yeah.
Well, I have one student, and I just met him this year. He's a new student. He comes in like every 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And it's something as simple as, how's your day going? I'm like, I'm good, how's your day? He's like, fine. Fist bump, and that's it.
Yeah.
It's like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
But speaking of his mom, she's like, that's just like we were saying, something small, that's something small that he looks forward to. So, you know,
yeah. But
that's how my role is going this year. It's like basically I'm the third person in charge.
Mm.
So it's like vice principal, then myself. Relationship with upper admin. We discuss a whole lot. I do student support meetings. And I still support kids, staff, parents. So it's like, I'm still doing what I used to do, but
yeah.
I have a little bit more flexibility, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's great. That's really good.
Yeah.
What do you think it is about the little things with kids, like a fist bump? Like, what do you think that does for them?
Some kids, once they have that relationship with you, the one thing they don't want to do is disappoint you.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's crazy that I can tell a student, the same student that gives the fist bumps every day, he had to come to my office and I was like, hey man, I'm very disappointed in you.
Mm-hmm.
And the tears started welling up in the eyes and everything. Mm-hmm. And I think for myself that I treat them like humans.
Yeah.
They're so, you know, humans. And anytime I do like a professional development, I tell staff, like, get rid of the Matilda mistrustful method. It's like the I'm big, you're small, I'm right, you're wrong. Like, don't treat them like that. Treat them as humans. And one thing I will do if I'm wrong, I have no problem apologizing to kids.
Mm.
And I remember when I was like, I've never had an adult apologize, said I'm wrong. But if I'm wrong,
that's huge.
I own up to it, and I want you to know that I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But just being real with them, and I always, you know, give them an opportunity to tell their side of the story. And at times, teachers have been confused and had to come in you know, rectify situations like, oh, well, I thought they were doing X, Y, Z, but that wasn't the case. And once you get a student to sit down and tell exactly what happened, and then you find out that the teacher's wrong, and then that student's going to be like, well, I can trust Mr. Rivers. He's like my mouthpiece, my lawyer. He's I know for a fact that I can trust him. Those relationships like that, like, they just last forever.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's really, relationship is so crucial for everything in life, and especially in those situations. Yeah. Something that you said made me think of apologizing to kids is such a good thing to do, and it's so hard to do for many adults. And I think that it's because it's a multi-step process. You have to first be open to even think as the adult, like, I could have done something wrong, or I could have done something better here. Many adults have a hard time even just being open to that possibility. I think it might be a control thing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I also think then there, in the next step, is reflection, to actually then take the time to reflect on what happened and what could I have done differently as the adult, and it's my role in this situation. Again, I was thinking of one thing that we're really passionate about at Wonder is trying to take away that rushed, busy, distracted, disconnected environment, that feeling that so often happens within families. And I think it for sure happens in schools too. It's there's schedules, there's everybody's got a million things to do, with places to be, and it's just, it's hard to take that time, but it's so important. You can't get around it. You have to be able to make time to reflect, to talk to. It might be multiple conversations just to resolve one issue. I actually had to apologize today to one of our kids too, and I felt the nudge within me to do it, and at first I was like sitting there thinking, I'm not apologizing. They should have listened to what I said, and that's it. I'm the adult, I'm the mom. And it was a bit of a rough afternoon today, and I just kept feeling the nudge. Well, you know, could you have done something differently? Is there any fault in you? And how can you step up and model it, take the responsibility and model it? And so I did, and it completely changed the whole atmosphere. As soon as I did, I, you know, leaned in and I said, I want to apologize to you. I was getting really frustrated because you weren't listening, and I also was feeling stressed because I was trying to do something and you kept interrupting me with your disobedience, and we do need to talk about that, and we will. But I shouldn't have been as angry as I was, and I shouldn't have taken it out on you like that. So do you forgive me? And they did. And we were immediately able to go into the problem solving mode of, now let's talk about what you did and what needs to change. And I think that it really helped. We were able to move past it today.
Nice.
Yeah. Takes time though. And I just wanted to be like, let's move on. let's just follow his directions and move on. It's hard to do that sometimes.
It's hard, and it's not the normal, you know, from my experience.
Yeah. Apologizing.
Yeah, in that level of, I mean, you talk about like a parent to a child, but even in different levels of superiority, you know, like somebody who would be in a position of quote unquote power, you know, or authority, like actually being humble enough to say, like, I was wrong.
Yeah. You
know? So.
Yeah. Do you think that it's the same, like, adult to adult too? We have a harder time apologizing.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, you talk about to each other, but even with a superior, like on the workplace or something like that, you know?
Yeah. I also think I've been feeling very convicted lately of, within my own parenting, of forcing apologies to when they're not authentic on kids. So saying, you know, you need to say sorry to your sister, you need to say sorry to your brother, and if they do, they're really, in that moment, they're just doing it because I told them to. And then what is that showing you about what a sorry means?
Yeah, we had that conversation tonight when one of them did something and you told them, you didn't tell them to go say sorry, but you told them to go make it right.
Yeah.
And the first thing they did was go and say, I'm sorry. And we said, what are you sorry for? I don't know.
Oh, man.
Like, you didn't make it right. You didn't talk about what the problem was. You just were hoping to throw this Band-Aid over top of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Because really, the goal is reconciliation
and
restoration, right? It's not just to say the words, I'm sorry. So I think that that's excellent that you model that with students because I know you're not, surely not saying sorry just to say it. Like, you're modeling how you're restoring something with between you and somebody else, and that's so good.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, I think your goal was that you're trying to build trust with people. And so that's the other conversation that we have a lot of times with kids is like, you know, you made a mistake and you did something wrong, but it's there's more implications than just following the rules. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that means that it's a lack of trust. Sometimes that means that I can't trust you because of this thing that you did. And so and so building that trust back up, you know, and not, I don't need you to just say sorry to me. I need you to do things that continue to build the trust up.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just about the words. So.
Yeah. Something else that I remember you doing so well is exciting, like creativity and passion in kids too. And I think that you do that with your photography for sure. But in other ways as well. And I think that it's also this modeling of, what just life can look like, because sometimes I know as in the school setting, we can just feel like it's just within these walls. We're talking about school and all the things about school. And do you find that you get to talk about still to this day? Do you get to talk about your photography or other passions that you have with your students?
Yeah, well, actually, I teach a few like beginners photography classes.
Oh, nice.
And every time I teach one, I either have like former student or current student join the class.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
So, and also yearbook makeup pictures, like I'll bring my equipment in and set up and get the kids that weren't able to take yearbook pictures. So, and of course, to the littles, it's like, it's the best thing in the world, like seeing me do something else, you know? And then the older kids, they want to, well, how does that connect to that, and how does that work? So explain it, you know, to them.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a great thing. My ultimate goal, whenever like I retire or whatever, I want to redirect behavior in schools through photography.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I want to teach kids that, like, struggle, you know, put that anger into your work, into your photography. So,
wow,
that's good.
Yeah,
that's super cool. Yeah. Well, it's so metaphorical too. It's like look through a lens. Different perspective.
Yeah.
Like, let's change the lens on this and how you see the world. You get to be creative and artistic in that way. That's really cool. Yeah, kids would love that. I think that's how you build relationship too. And I think that's good advice for any parents or other caregivers that might listen to this. If they're struggling to connect with their child because of maybe some behavior challenges that are happening, or just in general, sometimes maybe there's no behavior challenges or like obvious ones, but I guess they still would be behavior challenges of even just like lack of engagement when you're trying to connect with a child, because that can happen too, where it just seems like we're trying and there's just like nothing, it feels like there's nothing happening between us and we're trying to build a stronger relationship or whatever. I think that is such a good way to do it, is to work with your hands, find ways to be creative and let them try it. I think, again, it goes back to the busy piece too. I see that in our lives as well, where we're like rushing from one place to the next, or, okay, getting ready to go into school. Now we're at school all day and we're not even together. Now we're back home from school and now let's get the dinner on the table. Now we clean up dinner. Now we have to go or do our chores and go to bed. And there's such little time sometimes, I think, to be leaning into just pure joyful activities for mm-hmm. the sake of just I enjoy this.
Mm-hmm.
And they're powerful.
Yeah.
Even like 20 minutes. Doesn't need to be like a 3-hour thing, just a few minutes together even.
And something else I did last year, I bought yoga mats. So the first 5 minutes of I got a student that was had a behavior issue, brought them to my office, and I had a backdrop on my wall that was like of an island on a beach, and they would meditate for like 3 to 5 minutes.
Hmm.
I didn't say anything. I didn't, I just gave them time. And that's something I actually learned from one of our old students, twins, ML. I learned that from him. And he always wanted time, so I just started giving my kids time. I would put some nice bar music on, or a lot of, I play a lot of 80s music.
Nice.
Put it on, just them relax. And when you talk to them, it's like they're not heightened, you know. Mm-hmm. They're standing them, you know. They can verbalize what happened easier. So time is something that, you know, I give students. Like I always try to give them 2 to 5 minutes of just get your thoughts together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
In the parent coaching framework that we use, the very first step is to communicate to a kid that they're safe with you. Do you agree that that's an important first step before engaging with a child? I mean, really with anybody.
Yeah. They want to know that they're safe, and they want to know that, you know, especially me, being the black guy. They want to know, you know, so I got to make sure I talk in a calm voice or I'm overly welcoming, or, you know, like, I want to be, but let's talk, you know, so they need to know, they need to know that they're comfortable and, just like you said, they're safe.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the phrases that we'll use is, you want to go slow and low and then listen. That body language is really important, especially in a heightened situation where there's heightened emotions on either side. I mean, I will feel heightened emotions even if maybe the child isn't in front of me. And if I just change my posture to be like lower and go a little bit slower, it really calms me down too. So we don't want to escalate ourselves and then escalate anything else in the kid too. I think that's a good tip for families.
Mm.
And then kids remember that. They remember when you're escalated, so they're going to always think you're going to be escalated.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of our eighth graders last year, like, sad to say, they didn't even want to talk to our principal. They thought they didn't want to get yelled at or get in trouble. And then I would come right in, and everything was just decrease, de-escalate, because it's somebody that you trusted. And I remember we had a student last year, he was just walking, he's gonna walk off campus, but he kept pacing back and forth, and the principal said, hey, I'm outside behind him, you know, he's getting close to the street. He was just getting bad, so I got to him, and I just wrapped my arm around him. I said, hey, have you ever seen my truck? He's like, no, what kind of truck do you have? I got a Durango. You want to look at it? He's like, yeah, let me see it. So we walked to my truck, opened the door, got him inside. I was like, go ahead, hop in the driver's seat, feel it. You know, he calmed down after like 5 minutes of talking. I said, hey, can we go back inside and talk? Like, you know, I need to use the restroom. Something happened. He's like, yeah, come on, let's go back in. So once he went to my office with no problem, but because my principal, I think, yelled at him about something months ago, he automatically, you know, he's going to yell that again.
Yeah.
That's like I said, they remember that, you know, in that moment, if you don't make it right with them, they're gonna always remember that, you know, that episode. And sometimes some kids, you can make it right, and they're still going to remember that because no kids are the same. Mm-hmm. So they work on one, probably not gonna work on the other. You know, so
yeah,
patience is a big virtue.
Yeah. That made me think of something when we were going through some, I guess, training in our teaching, the teachers on the teacher's side. There was something that we were being taught of a 5-to-1 rule of to even keep track of what you're saying, whether it's through a lesson or just interacting with kids in general, of you should have 5 positive, mm-hmm. encouraging things to every push for feedback, or some might call it negative, but it should never even be negative. But if it's like a constructive thing, and we were very fortunate to have team teaching too happening a lot in our school. And so we would even, I remember standing in the back of the classroom as the other teacher was leading. If the other teacher's leading, I would be in the back. Every positive thing he or she would say, I'd hold up on the one hand and keep track. But then if there was something that was pushing them, challenging, constructive criticism that might be perceived mm-hmm. as more negative to the child, holding up fingers on the other side and trying to keep that 1-to-5 balance. And it's way harder than you might think it is. And so that made me think of that. Like, people remember how you make them feel, and you don't even realize that you're doing it sometimes.
Yeah.
So I think that is something that could be helpful for families too, as they're addressing behavior, whether at home or it's behavior that's happening at school that they're talking about at home. What would you say is currently, in this past year or so, that you, from your experience, what is one of the biggest hurdles or burdens that kids are facing in school that are also impacting their parents, like where parents mm-hmm. are getting involved?
I would say accountability. A lot of kids, and I deal with, my school is K-8, but I deal more with middle. Just being accountable for, and we had a discussion on this today with the counselor, and I was telling kids, like, you know, when you get in the car and your parents ask, you know, hey, what happened, be honest, this is what happened, this is what I did, have a solution, this is how I can fix it.
Yeah.
But when you start and you say that person did this, and you tell about everyone except what you did,
mm-mm.
you're like, well, why are you in trouble? You didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the thing about it, it starts to snowball. Parents are taking time off to email teachers and administrators, or having to take off to come in and have a meeting because they want to know what's going on. And at the end result, if you had just been honest, it could have been a conversation your parent had with you, and you could have moved forward. But now you've got so many people involved. Time has been taken away from instruction or from doing. And parents have, you know, take time off, and if they didn't have time, they're going to lose money. And I said, honesty is the key.
Yeah.
Hold yourself up. Like, yes, I did this. Yes, I did that. I understand why, or somebody, or you can say, I did this, can you explain to me why I shouldn't have done
it? Yeah,
that's right.
Good. You're old enough to ask questions, you're old enough to hold those conversations, so, or if you don't want to talk, you have phones, Google it, and I said, yeah, use TikTok for what it is, ask TikTok, you know, like, you can ask questions on there, so, self-accountable. And stop putting your parents in positions where they have to take time out of their schedule to do stuff.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I wasn't expecting that answer. That's great.
No, that's really good, yeah.
What do you think it is about the hesitancy to be truthful or vulnerable or honest so that they could be accountable? Is it, do you think it's just like embarrassment or just avoidance?
It's all about, do you remember that we had a book called Yardsticks?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Certain ages and grades, certain things are normal for kids. I remember like 4th and 5th grade, 6th grade, they're going to do whatever to please their peers. So, even if it's embarrassing, teachers, their peers are more important than, you know, those adults.
Yeah.
So, it's like, I'm not going to, you know, make myself look, they call it a snitch. Yeah. Or, I still look like I'm being, I'm telling on someone in front of my peers, even though I know it's the wrong thing to do, but I would rather take that reprimand from my parents and teachers and to still be cool in the eyes of my friends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's all about, you know, perception and everything. It's all about, you know, how my friends are going to perceive me or how, you know, they're going to treat me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, and it's, so cool. It's common for certain ages, but, you know, just trying to get them to understand that, hey, telling the truth is still okay. Telling the truth is still cool. So,
Yeah. Do you think it would be helpful for parents and other caregivers to be then involved in the lives of their kids' friends? Like, know them and build a community that way?
100%. Yeah. I just always remember, when I was growing up, my parents knew my friends, knew their families, their parents. Because, I mean, they're going to be friends and true friends. We're all going to be together. We should all, like, know each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
So, you know, I honestly think that. And then sometimes parents can see in other kids what their particular child can't see in that student.
Mm-hmm.
For example, that's my friend, but my dad can see that person's doing some unkind things, or that person's, you know, has some ulterior motives. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that that's my friend, but as a parent, they can identify.
Yeah.
And, you know, that parent can have that conversation with their student or their child. Hey, you might want to watch out, be careful. You know, sometimes you may have to cut ties with that person.
Yeah. It's good.
That's huge. That's really important. Well, I could just keep talking to you for so long about all the different aspects of this, things that you might want to share on students, things you might want to share on education, things you might want to share with just us knowing you as a friend. But with the purpose of this podcast and to wrap up with maybe this last question, I'd love to give one more piece of wisdom or advice towards parents and caregivers, especially as this new school year has started and some behavior challenges might have already started to pop up. It's probably a tough question in the sense of that there could be a wide range of ages and different types of challenges, whether it's a kindergartner all the way to like an 8th grader or something like that. But say a parent is just struggling with something that their kid is struggling with already at the start of the school year. What would you say to a parent who's in that position?
The first thing I would say is do not be afraid to ask for help. And be open, be vulnerable, because the person that you're asking for help may tell you something that you don't want to hear. But it could be the truth. It could be the determining factor what's going to turn that behavior around or turn that struggle around for you.
Yeah.
And I would also say, like, you know, if the school suggests something, just don't say no. Say no and say, what if we try this? Have an idea, have a backup plan, I have another route they can take. You know, I've been in IEP meetings and Final Four meetings, and they're like, I don't want to do this. Okay, well, what's the next plan? What's the next step? You know, you're student's advocate.
Yeah.
If you think they should do something, of course, speak up for them. But just like I say, like, make sure that you have a plan B. Make sure you have another alternative as to what could help, or let's try this.
Yeah.
You realize that everything that's put in place and everything that's designed for a student to try is not going to be successful. Sometimes you have to go through step B, all of it is Z, until you figure it out.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's real. That is so real. That's great. A great reminder. Well, we love you, Mr. Rivers. Thank you for doing this. So kind. How can we support you and send you off well with, if anybody wants to know more about you or just things that are important to you, is there anything that you'd love to promote, like whether it's a resource that you have found really helpful and you think parents might like, or I know that many people who listen to our humble podcast here are more in this area in Pennsylvania. So maybe the photography might not be as relevant, although maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you travel a bit. But I also do know that we do have listeners that are in Charleston just because we're from there originally, too. So I would love for you to share where people can follow you on what you're doing with your photography business. And anything else that you might want to share before we head off?
As far as photography, all things social media, Ricardo Rivers Photography. My website is ricardoriversphotography.com. But as far as like getting advice and getting, you know, tidbits and everything on kids parenting or whatever, I would say I watch a lot of TED Talks. I also I'm on TikTok way more than I watch TV. So what I've developed is I follow a lot of teachers and educators.
Yeah.
And she started following a lot, like others start popping up. So basically they're on there giving like advice, or people in the comments asking questions.
Yeah.
So they're educational podcasts. Like sometimes I listen to those on TikTok, but like it's a great tool. I think it's more personable, more real for me. That's why, you know, I can get on there and listen to somebody explaining to me what they did, or explaining to me like how they, you know, had a student just turn around. Trying to think what else. Really can't think anything else.
Yeah, TikTok's a great That's suggestion. Good. I haven't been on TikTok in a while, but I do think that I should be on.
I've been using TikTok like YouTube lately, just searching stuff, and it's really interesting.
Yeah.
I never thought of it like that function.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what you said about how like when you search one thing and then the algorithm starts to send you more of it, it's like such a good tool. And how you also said it's a bit more personal. You can ask people. There are even professionals, as you mentioned, on there. You can even ask people questions or advice. That's great. Yeah, I have not thought about that, especially as from the perspective of someone who's involved in the lives of kids, and you're working to support them and you feel stuck, you have a question. That's a great, great tool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're the best. Thank you so much. We'll let you go. Thanks, Mr. Rivers. Yeah, good to see you. Best wishes for the rest of the school year, too.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Bye. See you, man.
Bye.